And now, back to Help My Midlife Sucks with your host, Laurie Dean.
Welcome back. My next guest is a sex therapist turned relationship and intimacy specialist, and she's here to help us transform our love lives into hot, extraordinary adventures. Oh, that sounds good to me. Maggie Bain is her name, and she slams the textbook shut and pulls back the covers to reveal her secrets for making relationships rock solid and hot. Her work helps uncover the beliefs and behaviors that keep our love life ho-hum, and she shares this in her new book, Love on the Rock. Maggie approaches what is often a taboo conversation with the lightness and intensity of someone who is unwilling to allow relationships to remain anything less than extraordinary. Now, how does she do this? Well, partly by sharing her own intimate personal stories and thought-provoking insights. And I should also mention that Maggie is in her 50s, so she knows us. She knows our needs, our challenges, and our sticking points. And there is no taboo to this conversation that we're going to have with her tonight. And I'm really looking forward to it, as I'm sure you are. So let's get learning Maggie's secrets as I welcome Maggie Bain to Help My Midlife Sucks. Maggie, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
And we were just having a little chat before we started as well, and you had been living in the Bahamas. You're back in Scotland now, but I was also reading in your bio that you were the first sex therapist in the Bahamas, and I'm wondering, how did that go over?
Ah, yes. Talk about breaking ground. It's always interesting, you know, when you are the first of something, you're wondering, well, why weren't there first before you? You like, what stopped? So, you know, like a lot of the Bahamas is made up of lots of different islands. And, you know, when you've got small islands, you've got small communities, people know everything and know everything about you. And so people are much more closed. And so it's just harder to sort of break traditions and break cultures, and so have to go in with testing the waters, really, to begin with. And that's why originally when I started my private practice after I trained in Florida, I actually started and did it for 2 years, a weekly column in the local newspaper called Loving Relationships. And by doing that, I sort of most of the articles to start with were relationshipy with a little bit of sexual bit at the end. And then as people warmed up and it was more accepted and the newspaper loved it, then I was able to, you know, get a little bit braver and a bit wider. And that's how my private practice grew from there, and speaking engagements and being guests on radio shows. And it's so funny now because there are so many people talking about it on the radio in the Bahamas. And so it's great. I've opened conversation to an area to say that it's okay to talk about these things.
Yeah, absolutely. And needed. We need to talk about these things too.
Yes. And I came from a nursing background of over 30 years. So I use medical language. And so it's not slang. It's not streetsy. And for the people that find it very delicate, very sensitive, I sort of change the tone depending on where I go. So I love that you say that we can talk about anything, because I'm like,
oh. Yeah, let's go. Exactly, because I really think we need to. I think for so many cultures, it's such a taboo subject, and yet it's crucial for us to understand not only what's going on with us sexually, but within our relationship or with other relationships and other partners if we're stepping out at all. So I'm really anxious to get to some of what you have to reveal, your secrets. But before we do that, I guess there's a couple of things I just want to talk about. First of all, is you mentioned your background as a nurse, and I believe a midwife as well. And how did that lead you to becoming a sex therapist, to doing what you're doing?
You know, it's so interesting because so many people think that I've completely broken off from nursing and that it's completely different. But for me, it's been a natural progression. I mean, when you think about it, you go from medicine to a mental health area. Sex therapy is a branch of psychotherapy, and it came from family therapy. And it's only about 30, 40 years old, because we realized that a lot of family problems, of lots of family issues and children and all that, came from the central, most important priority relationship within the family group. And that's where it came from. So, You know, I felt that over the 30 years where I worked with infertility and plastic surgery, which is to do with body modification, all to do with self-esteem and to do, most importantly, with sexuality. And once we start doing these body modifications, you know, it changes relationships too.
Mm-hmm.
So it was more that it was crossing the boundaries between medicine and mental health. Because there's quite, they're in their different corners there. But our head is joined to our body and our body's joined to our head. We are linked. What we think can affect us physically and vice versa. So, in fact, sex therapy is a beautiful combination of medicine and mental health and psychology and all that, you know, psychosocial, because it's so important when somebody comes to me when I'm taking down the history to find out what physically has happened to them. Medications affect our sexuality and our drive and all that stuff. So it's so important. So actually, it's a beautiful blend. And as a nurse, we're counselors, you know, we talk mm-hmm. and we listen. So for me, it was just a wonderful progression and something actually that I'd wanted to do for years and years. But
is there a difference between a sex therapist and a relationships and intimacy specialist?
That's a great question. You know, I started off in 2009 after I trained, and I started as a relationship and sex therapist because I didn't want to just be called a sex therapist. Because, you know, when he's not taking out the garbage and he's not doing this and she's nagging me about this, people don't connect it with their intimacy, and something usually has gone amiss in the bedroom with the vulnerability and all of that. So by saying relationship, I opened the doors wider. And so there was a catchment there. People came, and whether sometimes there was direct sexual issues and sometimes not. And sometimes there were fully sexual issues that had gone wrong. So it just opened the doors wider. And then people didn't like the word therapist. I tried coach, I tried counselor. It's finding what is comfortable. And I'm not about the titles. I'm trying to find a place that people are most comfortable to open up and find a trustworthy person. So that's how it is my specialty. Didn't want to be called expert. That's not nice. Perfection, and there's no perfection in relationships. Who wants to strive for ultimate perfection? You know, that's a toughie. So that's how I landed on relationship and intimacy specialist, and is the one I feel most comfortable with. And I find people are most comfortable with that title too. So that's what's most important.
Is there a common complaint that you see with people in midlife when it comes to sex and relationships? Is there something that's kind of universal with your clients?
Well, you know, midlife, and here we are, you know, in the 50s, and, you know, every decade we are changing, our desires are changing, but very most importantly, our hormones are changing. And so particularly as women, you know, if our estrogen is dropping and we're just letting either nature take its course, or we're just treating the symptoms of hot flashes and, you know, mood swing and all that sort of thing, then we may find, and it's not for everybody, but, you know, our drive, our desire changes. And that is often a common complaint because, of course, you know, two to tango, and if your partner isn't at the same stage as you are, then, you know, the boat starts rocking.
Yeah.
And that's where, you know, and if you're able to talk about it, open up, but if there's a lot of things that you're dealing with yourself, with your own changes, it's very hard not to feel criticized. And that's the thing. Once we start talking about, you know, our sex lives, our love life, even with our partner, it's a tricky thing. A lot of people don't have that level of communication, which is the key. You know, if you have trouble with talking about things out of the bedroom, how on earth are you going to be able to talk about those sensitive things?
And I think this time of life, too, is interesting because you mentioned all of the changes, not only hormonally, but if we have children, a lot of them are out the door or on their way out. There's this empty nest feeling. And maybe we haven't had a strong connection with our partner in a very long time because other things have gotten in the way. So if suddenly we're stuck, quote unquote, with each other, and we can't communicate about anything, of course, it's going to carry over into the bedroom and affect all of that as well. And I think also what I'm hearing from a lot of people at this age is they've never really had to have sex conversations with their partner. They just get together and do the things that seem to work. But now as things change, they don't know where to begin.
Exactly. And this is where the ho-hum is in my, you know, love rock, take your love life from ho-hum to extraordinary. The ho-hum is the bit dull, the bit boring, the bit predictable. Oh, I know what's going to happen. His leg's going to go over there. His arm's going to go over here. Oh, I know what's going to go. And you just kind of either zone out or let's get this over with or whatever. And so the pleasure, the joy, and the fun of, I know I still love the person, but, and I know I still want to be with them, but, you know, it's making it as great as we can. Because people forget that people choose to be in the relationship. You know, we can't force somebody to be in the relationship with us if they don't want it. If you're married or not, whether, you know, you think that's going to be the tying thing, it's not. And so we've got to make it as great as we can. And I always tell people, you know, it's so easy to point the finger and blame the other person. Well, they're not doing this. Or da, da, da. We've got to look at how we're own behavior, how we're own acting, and what we're wanting out of the relationship, and how we're contributing to it.
That makes sense. And you've talked about three universal needs that people need so that they can have these extraordinary relationships. Can you talk about that a bit?
Oh, well, you know, this is where, of course, men and women are different. And of course, we approach things differently. We don't need to bash over all these things over. But where people forget is that at one point, at the very beginning, we're all absolutely the same. And we present in a different ways, though. And we all want to feel needed, that you have a place in your life for me. We all want to feel wanted, desired, that, you know, you are, I am everything that you want me to be, and loved. So when men are wanting to touch and engage and have sex and be intimate and all of that, it's their way of expressing that love, that need. They want to feel it. If they're rejected all the time, it's basically they translate it as, well, you don't need me. You obviously don't want me, which that means to me that you don't love me. And so, and it goes vice versa for women too. So, but just in different approaches and in different ways. But the three needs are there. And if we don't feel those, that's where the disconnect comes about.
Is this one of the reasons why you wanted to write Love on the Rock, to help people understand these needs and start uncovering them for themselves and in their relationships?
Well, I saw not only in my work, but with friends and family, and, you know, I'm a great observer, and I saw that people miss so many opportunities to connect and flirt with each other all throughout the day. You know, they were leaving everything to the bedroom and expecting, you know, they hadn't seen each other, they hadn't talked to each other. The other person had talked badly to them in the morning. They'd had an argument, and they still expected that everything would be fine once they reached the bedroom. So, and it really doesn't work like that, particularly for women, because, you know, we have the slower buildup. We are all about the relationship. You know, if you treat me right, if you talk to me nicely, I'll be sweet for you too. But if you're going to, if it's going to be otherwise, well, honey, nothing's happening. So, but men respond to that as well. Men respond to that great psychological warming up, that depth, that emotional nurturing. And so it compliments, the bit of sweet talk, but it's that flirting. It's the thing that connected us in the beginning that people lose sight of. We get comfortable with each other. And so we think all the firsts have gone, you know, the first kiss, the first dance, the first this and that. And so it's just like, well, we've got this, we've been through that. And so, you know, you should be happy with what you've got. But life gets very boring, you know, between work and children, you know, it just humdrum life gets really, really boring. And so we all need that bit of excitement, that bit of, you know, thing that puts the pep in the step and gets you going. So
how can we start to talk to our partners about this? Because odds are good if we're feeling that it's ho-hum, they are too, whether it's the, you know, the wife or the husband, whatever. How can we start to have this kind of conversation if we maybe have never had anything like this before?
You can start talking about, I listened to this radio show with Laurie Dean and she was, and, you know, I just thought some of the points that brought up, you know, what do you think about that? And are you feeling that? And it's all that kind of, you've got to think of those good times. Timing is everything. I mean, trying to open a discussion like this as you're rushing off to work is not the time to do it. And also, I always tell everybody, please don't talk about all of these things in the bed, in the bedroom. Because it's better to discuss these things, because you don't want to be the bed of contention. You want it to be that place of retreat, that your bed is your playground, the fun place, the pleasure. So whether it is, you know that we have, just think about where the times and places where you've actually had the best conversations, where you've both been relaxed, when you both, you know, it's about creating this, you know, you hear over and over, the safe place. There should be that little ring of space around the two of you where you are able to open up. And that's where it's so important to, you know, if there has been history of, you know, shutting each other down, humiliating each other, you know, bad, bad thing, where you don't want to open up to each other. That's when you often need professional help to get past all those resentments and anger before you can even enter all this. But for the couples who are, you know, just feeling a bit lackluster and, you know, thinking about it themselves, think about, you know, it doesn't have to be a date night, just whether it's, you know, a comfortable time after dinner or before dinner or out on the deck, on the patio, or wherever it is. So it's digging deep into what's worked in the past and try and revisit and build up on these things again.
I'm glad you brought up date night, because that seems to be a buzzword these days. And people think that, oh, once a week, my spouse and I will go out for dinner or a movie and we're on a date. But the investment, the emotional and psychological investment isn't necessarily there. It's just, you know, something we do. Whereas I like this idea of not waiting for that moment that you set aside as being date night to have these kinds of conversations, but just to take a moment in your evening or wherever it is in your day to just start opening the doors and seeing what can happen. And when it goes into the bedroom, if these kinds of things get out in the open and both people are willing to engage in conversation and take it into the bedroom, does that translate into sex talk, if you will? Maybe helping each other understand that things are changing and this doesn't work for me anymore, so I'd like you to try this kind of thing?
It can. And, you know, my work is so individual. I don't have templates for, you know, oh, we're on the third session and we should be doing this. It's so tailored toward each individual couple. But I'm very much into, I'm glad you brought that up, about so many people have, you know, passing ships and throughout the day, basically. And there's not a time where they sit down and, you know, some people call it the temperature check or, you know, how was your day? What was it? And sometimes, you know, for some couples, they can get through all those things and zip through it, you know, 10, 15 minutes. It might only be, you know, that quality time, but it's that connection. It's that sharing. Sharing is the intimacy. You know, people think intimacy is just sexual intimacy, but it's not. Intimacy is the closeness. Why I want to share my story with you rather than the person next door or my work colleague. You know, why I give you the long story rather than the short story is because I know that you're my biggest fan. I know that you're on my side. I can share with you. And so that's where the intimacy part is so lacking in so many couples' lives. And just making that connection. And it will be. It's so much of relationships is habit forming. If you don't do it, you've got out of habit. You know, as quickly as a bad habit can come in, you can bring in a good habit again. So it's just consciously making a decision to do these things. And it's the willingness on both sides. You know, I may be willing to do it, but if he's not willing to do it, then it probably isn't going to happen. So this is where, you know, you both got to be on board about these things, you know.
I want to get back to your book for a moment, because I suspect a lot of what we're sharing now is in your book, but also, do you share your own personal stories?
Yes. Well, my wonderful book coach, editor, Amanda Johnson of True to Intention, when I started this whole writing process, and she was the one that told me, she said, "Now, Maggie, you have to put your personal stories in."
And was that hard for you to do, to be that intimate and open?
Well, yes, considering how, you know, I'd written articles for 2 years with none of my personal stories. And I thought that was extremely revealing and transparent. So, yes, but actually once I got into it and she said, you know, it's all part, it's the show me stories. You can say all these things, but a lot of people aren't either creative enough, they don't know how to do it. And so the show me stories are, let me show you how to do this. And so it's showing you that I've walked the walk to be able to talk the talk. So it's my being real and showing you how possible it is. And then at the back of each chapter, there are exercises, and they're titled, each of them are called, How Can I Love You Better?
Oh, I love that.
Which is actually what the title of the book. But it's my, you know, check it. Instead of, you know, we're all so easy. We all express our loves in different ways. Sometimes actions, words, affection. Also, you know, and we're all giving love in the way that we feel that's what our partner wants. But we may be missing it. We may be missing what they really want. And so because it's the listening, you know, the whole communication thing, if we're not listening, if they're nagging and nagging, what is nagging? Nagging is because you're not listening and you're not paying attention and doing something about what your partner wants. So by asking them, you're cutting through, you know, all this energy saving costs and all these things that we look around. Why can't we do that with our relationships? Let's cut to the chase. Let me just ask you, how can I love you better? Well, you could make me my favorite thing, or, you know, you could wear those shiny red high heels every, you know, it's those. Would that make you happy? Okay, and you do it. And it's like, you know, it's that paying attention and really getting to know what your partner wants. But not only that, who they are, what makes them happy, what makes the whole thing between the two of you gel and get better and more extraordinary.
It seems to me that this would work for any kind of relationship, whether it was gay or straight, but it may not work for those relationships, as you touched on earlier, where one person is not responsive. Mm-hmm. Would that be an indication where the relationship is in deep trouble and may not be able to be saved?
Well, yeah, again, I've done so much work now and with couples, and I never jump to that now, because I've seen couples really turn things around.
Okay.
And sometimes it's just with my guidance, but definitely if it's like that, if one's not willing, I'd say go for professional help straight away. Find somebody in your area. And you're probably going to have to start off, if it is like that, I usually recommend at least weekly sessions to begin with until things start turning around, and then 2 weekly and all that kind of thing. Because you want this to be a priority. You want to show each other that, you know, this is important. But also it's the third person, the therapist or the counselor, is all about holding you both accountable. Which is, you say you want this, you want help with this, and I'm giving you instruction. Show me, well, why hasn't there been a step taken this week? So it's hard work. You know, if relationships were easy, we'd all be glowing in perfect relationships.
But yeah,
it's complex,
yeah.
You know?
But we're not, yeah. I'm getting mindful of the time here, Maggie, and I want to ask you where we can get the book and how we can find out more about you.
Yes, great. Well, please, everything's on my website, and that's www.rocksolidlove.com. Please visit me. Also on Facebook, Rock Solid Love. There's many ways to contact me or email me at maggie@rocksolidlove.com. And you can purchase the book there. Just click on everything and it'll take you through to Amazon. It's also on Kindle as well.
What do you hope that listeners are going to take away from this conversation?
That it is possible. That where you are now doesn't mean that it has to be like this. The possibilities are endless. It's opening your minds and your heart and your imagination to creating something that is extraordinary. I have to show you the benefits of making extraordinary, moving you out of your comfort zone. So please contact me. I have a free 30-minute consultation on my website. Just click there and let's have a chat and see if we're a good fit for each other.
I really like what you said about moving out of your comfort zone, because we get stuck and it can be very difficult to get unstuck.
Exactly. It's not easy, but it's very possible.
We do have a little bit of time left too, and I forgot to ask you something which really intrigued me. So I want to see if you've got about 50 seconds to explain the true rubber band connection. What is that?
Oh, great. Oh, well, you'd have to read the whole thing in the book. But it's about that... I call it the true rubber band connection. It is the connection tying, binding around the two of you as a couple. So whether it's the distance between you, so it's that ping that takes us back to our rightful place, which means right beside you, so that if it is that I have to share that first piece of cake with you or share that secret or story with you, ping, I know I'm right back at my rightful place. And it's the distance, the thickness and the width of the rubber band depends on the level of intimacy, which is so much of it is trust. And so it is the wedge that is between us. If you're nice and tight and have got a tight rubber band connection, then the trust and the intimacy is very, very close. And that's where you will have a deeper, deeper connection. And we get onto the spiritual levels of a relationship and your soulmate connections. When it's a loose, wide band, rubber band, then often there's a wedge. There's too much space between the two of you and too much distance. And that's where things and people can come between us. And so... there you are.
There you are in a nutshell. Maggie Bain, this has been a fascinating conversation. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Laurie. Thank you.
We are out of time for another week here on Help My Midlife Sucks. Thanks once again to Roger Ladick and Maggie Bain, my special guests. And don't forget, you can listen to and download the replay of both of these interviews by going to helpmymidlifesucks.com. Thanks for being here once again. I look forward to having you join us next week. And of course, I want to remind you until then to always ask yourself in any situation, what else is possible? I'm Lori Dean. This has been Help My Midlife Sucks. Good night.
Thanks for listening. And don't forget to check out the Help My Midlife Sucks webpage to get the lowdown on upcoming guests, listen to past episodes, share your comments and questions, and much more. You'll find it all at HelpMyMidlifeSucks.com. Once again, that address is HelpMyMidlifeSucks.com. Until next week, be curious and expect miracles.